Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be forced to endure the pain of retropharyngitis if I had to speak the words, "You missed today's show." Who needs campaign counsel? Peter Panapento is back with a new report, the Do-It-Yourself Fundraising Handbook. Self-funding campaigns are rampant, and Peter walks you through how to do yours smartly. He's a consultant and author of that report, and he's with me for the hour. On Tony's Take Two, Nonprofit Radio Testimonials. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeSpelling.com. Very glad to welcome back Peter Panapento from just like a short hiatus from the show. It was on early last month. He's a freelance writer and principal of Panapento Strategies, a communications consultancy working with nonprofits, foundations, and companies that serve the sector. He's a former assistant managing editor at the Chronicle of Philanthropy. He's at Panapento.com and at P. Panapento. Peter, welcome back.
Great to be here, Tony.
Yeah,
we haven't gone too long since we've had a chance to speak.
I know that.
Each
other. What brings you back so quickly? This is unusual. Generally, this does not happen. What the heck brings you back so fast?
Well, I think it is the release of this new report on do-it-yourself fundraising that I worked with the Chronicle of Philanthropy to produce within the last couple of weeks. It went live, and I think due to the coincidences of timing, we have another interesting report to talk about pretty quickly.
Okay, excellent. I agree. That's the reason. Let's see. All right, so do-it-yourself fundraising. What are we talking about? Let's make sure everybody knows what this this category is all about.
Yes, and it's a pretty rapidly emerging form of fundraising, although it's not brand new. So if you think back over time, you may have seen campaigns where people decide they're going to run across the country or try to break a Guinness Book of World Record, you know, World Records record, or shave their head for a cancer charity. These are typically do-it-yourself campaigns. These are campaigns where a supporter of an organization takes it upon themselves to take on a challenge or do something on behalf of their favorite charity and then solicits their friends and family for donations. If you think back about Terry Fox running across Canada back in the 1970s and 80s, if you even think more recently about the Ice Bucket Challenge, where a group of people, you know, decided that it would be a great way to raise money for ALS research to dump ice water over their heads. These are campaigns where the charity isn't doing the heavy lifting. Their supporters are, and they're raising money on their behalf.
Cool. All right. Don't we just call this peer-to-peer fundraising?
Well, it's a subset of peer-to-peer fundraising. Peer-to-peer fundraising also includes a lot of really charity-managed events. So, you know, peer-to-peer fundraising includes walkathons and runs and bike rides and things that are scheduled events that the charity organizes, and then people go out and raise money for
okay.
the charity.
Okay.
Do-it-yourself is really self-organized events where the charity doesn't schedule an event per se or really go to great lengths to organize it. These are things that are really done by the fundraisers themselves, the people who hatch a really interesting idea or want to take on a challenge of their own to raise money. And with online platforms now, charities are kind of starting to steer people a little bit and helping them and giving them the tools to do these campaigns on their own in a bit more of a formalized way than they've been done in the past.
Right, cool. Okay, so I see it's a subset of peer-to-peer. But, right, as you said, the charity's not organizing. They're encouraging you to organize on your own, and there's enormous creativity, and we're going to have a chance to talk about some of that, and support from the charity. I guess charities are recognizing that if they create this support infrastructure, and we'll have a good chance to talk about all that too, then, you know, they just keep that up, and their supporters can go off and do vast numbers of campaigns all on their own.
That's right. And yeah, and that's really what's exciting about this and why a lot of nonprofits are really moving into this space and trying to be more aggressive with helping their supporters do this for them, because it can really become almost a turnkey way to get fundraising revenue. Now, there are a number of things that you have to do to enable it, and there are costs that go into it to do
right,
it well,
right.
which we'll talk about later.
Yep.
But what's exciting and promising for a lot of organizations is it takes the onus off of them to have to organize some huge event with tons of volunteers and lots of paid staff to make happen, and it gives the tools to the people who are out there raising the money for them to do a lot of that for them.
Excellent. Cool. All right. So I know you have lots of examples of great support. Let's go in and the first thing that the report recommends is that there be a strong platform, and we just have like 2 minutes or so before our first break, just so you know.
Okay. Well, I'll quickly talk about a strong platform, and then we can come back to it after
yeah.
the break if
yeah,
we need
sure.
to. But
yeah.
What a lot of charities are doing, and really Charity Water is one of the groups that pioneered this, is they have created sections of their website where they offer fundraisers supporters all the tools they need to raise money in a do-it-yourself campaign. And Charity Water has done it, giving people the tools to give up their birthdays or their weddings or create their own challenges on their website. And then it really walks them through the process of setting up the campaign, soliciting their friends, and doing everything along the way that you need to do to actually successfully execute one of these campaigns as an individual.
Yeah.
So a lot of organizations are now investing in creating these platforms, almost in the same model that Charity Water has done. Groups like World Wildlife Fund has created a platform called Panda Nation, where people can engage in do-it-yourself campaigns, and a lot of other organizations that largely national charities, but some local ones too, are starting to try to create these types of platforms that really give people everything they need to do these campaigns and gives them some guardrails and rules of the road to help them do them well.
Yeah. Panda Nation. I love that at World Wildlife. That's cool. Panda Nation. I think we might be talking about St. Baldrick's, too. You admire a lot of the work that they do around this.
Yeah, they are a little bit different in that they organize people around a specific activity, which is having people volunteer to shave their heads to raise money for
right.
children's cancer causes.
Okay, so they're narrowing the focus of what they want volunteers to do.
Exactly.
Okay.
But they've been
okay.
able to raise tens of millions of dollars doing it, and they have really built up a lot of support and a lot of supporters for their cause by focusing all of their fundraising really on this activity and providing a lot of the same tools that the other sites are providing to do this. So they are a great example of a group to emulate if you're looking at getting into this space. They're
okay,
a bit
Peter.
More structured in terms of what the options are. And how they encourage people to do it, but a lot of the same tactics and ideas that apply to other platforms are ones that they've really mastered and perfected over the years.
Let's go out for our first break, and you and I'll keep talking, see if we have anything more to say about the platforms, and then we got conversation about some examples of challenges and marketing and stewardship. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at tonymartinetti.com. That's M-A-R-T-I-G. N-E-T-T-I. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Well, Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I feel like doing live listener love, etc. right now because I'm juiced about being back in the studio. It's been 3 weeks. I'm pretty sure that I was pre-recorded. So let's go abroad first with the live listener love. Going abroad, Brooklyn, New York. No, that's not very nice. I'm sorry. I take that back, Brooklyn. You're part of the five boroughs. Let's really go abroad. Mexico City, Mexico. Welcome, live listener love to you. Buenas tardes. Hebei, China. And we have multiple China, actually. Ni hao. Seoul, South Korea. Always checking in, just like China. Annyeonghaseyo. Kamsa hamnida. We have a couple in Brazil. We can see Sao Paulo. We can't see the other city in Brazil, but we know you're there. Live listener love to multiple listeners in Brazil. Did we get everybody? Oh, Vietnam. Dung. Vietnam. Live listener love to you as well. Let's come back into the U.S. New Bern, North Carolina. St. Louis, Missouri. Weehawken, New Jersey. Brooklyn, New York. You deserve a second shout out since I was unkind to Brooklyn. Bridgeport, Connecticut. All live listener love to each of those, and there's more coming. When we do the live listener love, of course, we got to do the podcast pleasantries. Because how could we not? How could I? Who's the we? There's no corporate we. It's I. I'm the host here. I need to be grateful, and I am, in fact, for the over 10,000 listeners each week listening on the podcast. Most of you on iTunes, then Stitcher, and then lots of other smaller platforms. Player.fm and podcast.net or something. And there's one in Germany, etc. Over 10,000 podcast listeners. Pleasantries to you. The affiliate affections always going out to our AM and FM listeners throughout the country. Let your station know, would you? If you're listening on AM and FM, if you're one of our affiliate listeners, let your station know that that you appreciate nonprofit radio. They will appreciate that feedback, and I will too. Affections to our affiliate AM and FM listeners. Thank you for that indulgence, Peter Panapento. Gotta be good to the audience, so thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, ditto. And you're not doing this without an audience. The audience is really why we're here talking right now. So you have to make sure that we're engaging them and and listening back to them too. So I'm all for it.
I do indeed. So thank you very much. Let's talk about some of the examples. You got some cool examples. You mentioned already Mike Fox. No, you didn't mention Mike Fox. The Mike. I'm conflating two things.
Yeah, there.
A guy got a job.
I mentioned Terry. Yeah, there's too many foxes.
There's a couple of foxes, right? Oh. But somebody got the job.
Yeah, I talked about Terry Fox, who was a cancer patient in Canada way back, I think, in like 1980. Who, made worldwide headlines for his quest to run across Canada and raise money for cancer research. And he actually died on his mission and never completed the quest. But he's been a national hero in Canada and had really became a model for, the individual who is willing to take on big challenges for big personal challenges to raise money for a cause that matters. And a lot of others have followed in his footsteps over the years. And one of them was a guy named Sam Fox, interestingly raises money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. So I guess we do have a lot of foxes who are trailblazers in do-it-yourself fundraising.
But he got that job.
Sam Fox, who was somebody actually interviewed several years ago when I was working at the Chronicle on staff, he ran the Pacific Coast Trail, I believe, to raise money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation in support of his mother, who was dealing with Parkinson's disease, and went through some pretty substantial challenges and raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for the charity as a result of that. And on top of his efforts, they actually ended up bringing him on staff to lead basically one of the first do-it-yourself charity-sponsored campaigns, where he was going out and helping people create their own challenges for the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple of pretty prominent examples of people who take on extreme challenges to do this. But there's also a number of people who are doing pretty ordinary things, too. We mentioned head shaving earlier, and we mentioned how Charity Water has really pioneered or kind of owned the space on people pledging their birthdays to raise money for the charity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are doing all kinds of things. They're organizing their own pancake breakfasts. They are, taking on, all kinds of challenges to try to break Guinness Book of World Records, whether it's around tennis volleying or bringing groups of people together to sing together and different things like that. So there's a lot of different modes that these campaigns yeah. and models that these campaigns can follow, and that's part of what makes it interesting and fun to see how people are doing this.
There's also the fear ones. There's bungee jumping. The report mentions singing karaoke, although I find it hard to believe that that's a real fear, but I guess somebody is afraid of karaoke, but I don't know. That to me isn't something I'm real. But I guess
that would probably be something that would not be facing a fear. But
yeah, I don't know. Well, if you have stage fright, I guess that could be a legitimate fear. But anyway,
For you, it wouldn't be facing a fear. But actually, Canadian Cancer Society, they created a campaign last year called the Fearless Challenge, which was essentially that people could acknowledge what their biggest fear is, and they could collect pledges up to a certain dollar level. And if people hit the goal for the pledge, then the person would then go and face their fear.
Right.
Tony, let's say I am my biggest fear is actually singing karaoke with you, because I know you'll totally upstage me. I would, tell my friends that, if I collect $5,000 in pledges, my friend Tony has agreed to have me sing with him, and then, once that pledge was hit, you and I would then go and do that, and we would report back with a video of what we did to everybody so that they could then laugh at how bad I was doing it.
All right.
So, and they had quite a bit of success with that, and they had people do everything from agree to bungee jump, to have spiders crawl all over them, to eat something that they are, some food that they're either afraid of or disgusted by, all kinds of different things. And again, it leaves the door open for a lot of imagination and a lot of different ways that people can do something personal and fun to raise money.
Long-term listeners to the show will remember that years ago, back when I used to chase likes on Facebook, I had something under 300, and a couple of high school friends challenged me that if they could get to 300, get me to 300 likes, the Facebook page, the nonprofit radio Facebook page, not mine. If they would get me to 300, then what would I do? And I agreed to do a blue pedicure, get a blue pedicure. And we called it the Blue Pedicure Challenge, and indeed they got me to the 300. And I went to a salon across the street here on 72nd Street in New York City, and I got it. I got the blue pedicure, and I chronicled that. You can go to my YouTube channel, and you'll see there are three videos. There's one of me making the appointment and choosing my color. It was a kind of a royal blue, I think I chose, and then there's one or two. I think I did it in two segments. The actual pedicure, and there's the waxing, etc., the application, of course, the drying, the massaging, the paraffin treatment. Oh, the hot paraffin treatment. Oh, that's a classic. So in any case, that was a highlight of the, I have not gotten a pedicure since then, but blue pedicure challenge is out there. And so, I wouldn't exactly say I was a pioneer in do-it-yourself fundraising, but it was a way of having fun, is exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly, and you can be really creative with these and do really personal things, and if you have a following on social media or on YouTube, this could be another great way for you to capitalize on that and do some good for your favorite charity. So I don't think I was familiar with the Blue Pedicure Challenge. That's pretty interesting.
It was fun. Yeah,
I do know that David Hezekiel, who runs the peer-to-peer forum and is doing a lot of work in this issue, he came up with for a charity a few years ago, came up with a hot pepper challenge. And I believe he collected pledges and had others collect pledges for the number of hot peppers they could eat in one sitting. So okay. There's lots of different ways you can do this.
My dad would be into the hot pepper challenge. Habanero is like tuna fish for him. I don't know. It's a juicy fruit for him, habaneros. Okay. Let's go. All right, so we have to have support now. Here's where we start to get into the infrastructure, and there is, as you mentioned, there's a cost involved with this. There's overhead. There has to be a platform for you to send people to when they decide that they would like to fundraise for you in this way. What is this? What is this? This is the platform for the volunteers who are going to run their own campaign. What does this platform need to provide them with?
Well, it needs to provide them with a few things, and I know a lot of the software vendors who serve the space are very good at helping build these platforms too, and actually have models for them. So, if you're working with one of those companies already, there may actually be a kit or some kind of starter that you could use through that vendor to actually help you get that started. And I won't name names on vendors here; we're agnostic, right?
Wait, hold on. We give shout outs to if it's a resource related to what we're talking about, right?
Right. So if,
okay,
you know,
give a few.
If you work with a Blackbaud or a DonorDrive or any one of those software companies, chances are they're now offering some kind of package for this, and we'll work with you on creating it. But what it essentially needs to have, in addition to a mechanism for actually collecting donations, typically are you know, an explanation of how to do it, some examples and ways for people to easily set up a campaign. It needs to equip them with ways to message and use social media and email to actually reach out to their friends and tell them about the campaign that they're doing. And it usually gives them a mechanism for you know, reporting back to them and thanking them and actually collecting the donation. So, all of these platforms, they all tend to look a little bit different, and they give people some different options, but essentially you need to give people a turnkey experience that allows them to do every part of their campaign through your platform and gives them the tools to do it very easily. The easier you can make it for people to not only make the ask, but, you know, post photos and make, you know, share on social media and be very clear about how they can be most effective in doing that, the better success you're going to have with those platforms.
Naturally, right? You got to make it easy for your volunteers.
Absolutely.
Okay. Once we have this, all right. So there's some investment there. You're going to have to create this yourself, which is probably not necessary, but or pay for a module that's a turnkey to be integrated into your site one way or another, whether it's a vendor you're working for or somebody you bring on for this or you purchase for this purpose.
Exactly.
All right. And then we need to drive our volunteers to this page, this platform. What's your advice around that?
Yeah, and this is probably as crucial as having the platform itself is actually making people aware that it's there and getting them to engage with it. As we've been studying this, and I've done this both with the Chronicle and with David Hesekiel's peer-to-peer forum, and talking to organizations that are trying this, there are some that have essentially created the platform and then not done much marketing behind it and have been, somewhat surprised that nobody came and really used it and raised much money for them. So you really need to do some marketing behind it. You need to think about what audiences or groups are most likely to want to raise money on your behalf, and then build a marketing campaign that actually makes them aware that it's there and comes up with some fun ways to engage them in that. The Canadian Cancer Society, which has had a lot of success in this, has also invested quite a bit of money in search engine optimization, so that when people type in cancer and fundraising, their site comes up. So part of it is being smart about what people might be searching for if they are interested in your cause and want to do something about it. Making sure that you've done the search engine optimization and the Google ads and other things that allow your platform to show up when people are actually motivated to do something. They specifically for health charities, they may be very interested in trying to do something for a disease that's affected a loved one or themselves or a friend who may have passed away due to a certain type of cancer. Making sure that you have your site top of mind and top of Google, I guess, for situations like that is another important thing to be thinking about investing in. And then making sure that it has a prominent place within your own web universe, that you're promoting it on your homepage, in your email newsletters, in any of the other things that you're doing to make people aware that it's there and that you're actually spotlighting examples of others who are doing it for you too.
On Google AdWords, we just had a show within the past couple of weeks exactly on that topic, and the segment is called Google AdWords. A reminder that Google offers $10,000 per month complimentary AdWords for nonprofits. So if you're not taking advantage of that, listen to that show on Google AdWords, and it will get you started. So I mean, essentially, it's no different than driving people anywhere else. I mean, you have a Facebook page, you have to drive them to that. You have a website, you want to drive people there. It's all about the marketing and the promotion. I'm surprised that there are organizations that are surprised that they set up a platform and then nobody comes to it. You have to.
Well, I mean, marketing and promotions is one of those things that for nonprofits is sometimes a difficult thing to get budget for. So and that's one of the big challenges facing the sector, I think, is that it's an overhead cost, and it becomes something that a lot of organizations are a little either budget conscious or don't necessarily think of it as upfront as they need to. But it's something that's really crucial in a environment like this, especially when it's not built around a specific event or one thing that the organization is doing. This is something that has to be almost ongoing marketing, because unlike a walkathon or a single event that you can put a lot of weight behind it for a few months and then take the rest of the year off, this is something you almost have to budget for and work on year round.
Okay, agreed. You invest this money, you want this to be a platform that's going to be used, I don't know what's a big number for your organization, hundreds of times or thousands of times or tens of thousands of times. You got to keep driving people to it. All right, I have to talk a little about some our sponsors and Tony's Take Two. So Peter, hang on, and you and I will keep talking shortly. Okay, hang in.
Terrific.
So there's more of Who Needs Campaign Counsel coming up. First, Pursuant. You need to raise a lot of money at year end, and I know that your year end push is in planning now, or it's going to be very soon. Maybe right after Labor Day is pretty typical for year end planning. Take a look at Year-End Accelerator by Pursuant. They're combining proven best practices with innovation in acquisition and cultivation strategies, all to improve your year-end. So you have a real strong year-end push. Check that out. It's pursuant.com/year-end-accelerator. Weebee Spelling. Spelling bees for nonprofit fundraising. These are not your mother's spelling bee. This is not your seventh grade spelling bee. They have live music, concerts, dancing, stand-up comedy, fundraising, and they managed to get spelling in too. So these nights are a ton of fun. There is a really cool video that shows all these things I just rattled off. You'll see the video at weebespelling.com, and B is B-E-E. WeBeSpelling.com. Now time for Tony's Take Two. This week I am boasting and I'm bragging. This is my gushing gasconade, because you have got to hear the testimonials that listeners have posted in iTunes reviews. Really, very thoughtful. I love them. So I'm grateful. There's over 60 of them, and I highlight a few of them in the video, which is at TonyMartinetti.com. I hope I chose yours. If you want to check out whether I chose yours, check out the video, the testimonials video at TonyMartinetti.com. That is Tony's Take Two. Peter Panapento, thanks for hanging in there again. You're a gracious guy. See, I usually don't have people on for the full hour, and even rarer, full hour by phone. But you're reasonably articulate and and engaging. So, so I thought, you know,
that's actually my tagline.
Let you hang on.
Articulate, engaged, and engaging. So,
okay, you should with that kind of lackluster expectations, then all your clients will be excited because you're you're under promising and way overperforming, I'm sure. Okay, let's. All right, I guess I just want to stress something on this platform and the marketing that you're doing to drive people to this platform. It really needs to encourage creativity around. I mean, that's subsumed in all the things we've been saying about all these vast examples, but of challenges that people have taken on. But you really want to encourage people to think outside the box of what everybody else has done, the run, the whatever.
Yes, and so. Part of it is giving them some examples of things that they can do, whether they are made up examples of things that you would love to see somebody try on your behalf, or whether these are things that somebody may have done for your organization already, and telling the story about that and making sure that you're giving them some guidance on some of the types of things that they can do on your behalf is really important here. So. Some organizations like World Wildlife Fund on their panda pages, they have categories of events that and challenges that people can take on to help guide, things that they think their supporters are going to be interested in doing, but also giving them a platform to jump off of and create their own ideas.
Yes. Cool. Okay.
The more that you're able to do that and then, you know, on the back end of it, really market the fact and tell the stories of the people who are doing campaigns for you so you can spotlight them. I think that's really helpful.
Okay.
Charity Water has done, again, a great job of this, too. Whenever they've had somebody do a creative campaign for them, and they've had some creative ones. They had somebody swim naked from San Francisco to Alcatraz after they reached a certain fundraising level. And then they also had somebody... Who hated the band Nickelback.
And right. This guy listens. Yes.
Decided to basically listen to them nonstop for 168 hours straight if people donated enough to him. And lo and behold, people did. And he had to subject himself to that auditory experience.
How many days is...
But they've done a great job of then, in turn, telling those stories, creating blog posts, featuring them on their homepage, creating videos about these things so that they can then show those back to their supporters as examples, but also as ways to get attention for the organization, too.
Yeah, cool. How many days is 168 hours? I don't know. Is that a week, maybe? Is that seven times? I don't know.
I was told there'd be no math in this interview, Tony. How you put me on the spot.
Well, you weren't told that by me. That's okay. That's a long time, 168 hours. I wouldn't have thought that the band Nickelback had 168 hours. Maybe he had to replay.
I'm sure he had to replay. Yes, and okay. I hope he was sleeping in there at some point, too.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. And pee breaks also.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on. So now, after your volunteers have done their campaigns, or while they're in the midst of them, while they're in the midst of it, they need support. They need to be told how to promote their own campaign inside your platform, and
absolutely.
How to ask and how to follow up, etc.
Yeah, and this is another really key part of it, is once you get them there and get them to agree to do something, you have to walk them through the process. And this is crucial with any peer-to-peer campaign. A lot of organizations have gotten very, very sophisticated at making sure that they're providing very clear instruction and motivation to their fundraisers around events that they're doing, and sending them emails, being available to field their phone calls and questions, and providing incentives to them for reaching different fundraising levels along the way. With these campaigns, you have to do the same thing. You really have to make sure that you have systems in place to be communicating pretty regularly with the people who agree to take on one of these challenges, and giving them tips and advice and maybe even mini challenges along the way too to help them be successful with these. So a lot of the more successful campaigns are ones that have a series of emails that they send out at various times to participants, telling them how to solicit their friends, reminding them when they haven't sent out a message or collected a new donation in a while, and giving them prompts and different things along the way to help them be successful with the fundraising. And some organizations actually have staff people who will, you know, reach out personally by phone or email and make sure that their questions are being answered and that they're getting the support they need along the way to do well.
Yeah, that's where this would be a challenge, I think, for some smaller shops. You need to be able to provide that. I mean, are there organizations that are doing it all only automated and they don't have personal support like that, like, you know, a line you can call or someone you can chat with live? Is that maybe that's less common than I'm realizing? I mean, how common is that personal support?
Well, I think, you know, for a lot of the larger campaigns, a lot of it is automated, but they do have some people who are minding the store and watching and making sure that when people are, you know, bumping their heads and facing challenges or not being very active, that they are following up with them and being in touch with them. So, in talking to a lot of these groups, this is an area that is a challenge for them, is figuring out what is the right level of support to offer. How can they do this in a way where they're not, you know, creating a whole new fundraising arm in their organization, but are still providing that level of support and service that's needed to do this well? And another thing we're hearing, and because this is a pretty new form of fundraising, there are actual questions in a lot of organizations about, you know, who in the organization and, you know, should be leading these efforts and where it should live. Is it something that lives wholly in the development department? Does it live in your marketing shop? Does it live, in some cases, in your technology section, because they're the ones who are leading the platform? I've spoken to people in organizations who wear all kinds of different hats who are engaged in leading these campaigns, and I think it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out what the best practices are and most effective practices are in making sure that if you are going to lead a do-it-yourself campaign, that that you have thought through, you know, how to structure it and how to have the right people in the organization leading it.
Your research didn't lead you to find that there's one form of organization or location where this lives that's more popular than others. It really is pretty much a scattershot still.
It's been a bit scattershot, but I think the groups that are most advanced on it are ones that already have peer-to-peer fundraising as part of their toolkit. I think the groups that, you know, have people that are there organizing walks and rides and various other peer-to-peer programs are seeing the opportunities here first because they're engaged with this kind of fundraising already and they're talking to each other. So a lot of groups are doing this out of their, you know, their peer-to-peer arm of their organizations already. But, you know, World Wildlife Fund, this has been a major technological investment for them. So they have technology people who are really kind of the key voices within the organization on that. And for Charity Water, this was a pretty much an essential and central part of the organization when it founded 10 years ago, were these types of campaigns. So I think it's much more marketing driven through that organization. So there's different avenues to get there. But for groups that are starting it now and are researching it now, these are questions that they're starting to ask themselves.
Okay. Interesting pronunciation. Now, you say Charity Water. I say Charity Water. I'm putting the emphasis on water. So now I don't like to quibble on nonprofit radio, although I am, but I don't know. I think it should be Charity Water, because doesn't Scott Harrison want the emphasis on the water and not on the charity part?
I'm pretty sure he does. You're absolutely right.
Should be Charity Water. Charity,
yeah.
Water. Charity Water, not charity. Charity Water. Charity Water. I'm pretty sure it should be Charity Water. Okay, well, we got some live listener love. We got New York, New York. I wonder if anybody from Charity Water is listening. But also joining us afresh, Oakland, California, Boston, Massachusetts, and Tehran, Iran.
Wow.
Live listener love to each of those. And we got more. If I didn't say your country yet, then you're coming. So live listener love going out to even more countries in a few moments. But, okay. Anyway, a little digression on pronunciation.
So how? Yeah, where do you? Excuse me. Charity water, though. It's charity.
Charity water. You mean?
And everything's lowercase. How? Where do you put the emphasis there? That's really.
Well, I think I just gave you the definitive.
I
answer.
Think you did.
At least for purposes of this show. I mean, this is the center of the universe. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the way it ought to be, for all being and all time. But at least when you're on my show, charity water. I would say I've never heard Scott Harrison, so I don't know. He's the CEO of Charity Water, for those, I don't mean to name drop, not like he's a friend, I just know of him, Charity Water. Okay, so you essentially, all right, so I understand there's timing challenges around what level of support and when people need support, but essentially the principle is you need to be a cheerleader for your volunteer fundraisers who are out there.
Absolutely. And you need to be talking to them regularly and giving them instruction and, as you said, being a cheerleader, encouraging them, but also giving them advice and help along the way to help them do this successfully. And, you know, while there isn't a straight formula for a lot of these campaigns yet in terms of you have to send 7 emails over a course of 2 months, to make these work most effectively, what's very clear is that you have to have something that is that is regular and consistent and as clear as possible. And then you have to be paying attention to the results of those different communications and seeing what's working and learning from that so that you can put your put the right emphasis on the right things moving forward.
Cool. Okay. Let's go out for our last break. And when we come back, Peter and I will keep talking about this, of course. And it's a bit of a double-edged sword. There's opportunities here, but there's also challenges. Stay with us.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, "Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office." Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Lively conversation, top trends, sound advice. That's Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, and I am his niece, Carmella.
And I am his nephew, Gino.
I love that drop. I got a tear listening to them. I was just with them last week in down at the beach. More live listener love. Here it is. I promised it. Since last, Tehran, Iran, checking in. Live love going out to Tehran, Chongqing, China, and also Guangdong, China. Ni hao, Taipei, Taiwan. I don't know if Taipei's been with us much, but certainly ni hao going out to Taiwan as well. And also Newburg, Germany. Cool. Guten Tag for Germany. Gotta love the live love. I do. All right, Peter, we have just like 5 minutes left or so, roughly, I'd say. Is that about right, Sam? A little more than that, like 10 minutes. So Let's talk a little about how this is a bit of a double-edged sword. You alluded to some of the challenges, but let's start with an upside. On the other hand, you're getting lots of new donors, which creates a challenge.
Right. You're getting new donors, and you're also finding ways to engage some of the current donors you have who may be, you know, looking for something new and a new way to support your organization.
Yes.
But, yeah, the challenge then becomes whenever you get new donors is how do you bring them into your organization and make sure that they don't become a one-and-done donor? And that's, I think, a particular challenge for these kinds of campaigns because they're not quote-unquote traditional in the same way where somebody who gives to you through a mail campaign or even through a personal solicitation. These are folks who are doing something that's kind of unique and different and may only do it once for you because it is so unique and different. I think it's probably in a lot of cases a lot easier to take on a physical challenge once and ask people for money than it is to do it a second time. There's a novelty to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So for a lot of organizations, they are they're happy to get the money and build the connection with these supporters, but they are struggling a bit on how to do that stewardship and to kind of move them up the engagement ladder so that they do more things with them down the line. And this has been particularly true for the ALS Association after the Ice Bucket Challenge, which was something they didn't even plan for and organize.
Right.
They didn't create a
right.
platform for this, but they suddenly had a lot of donors who were taking part in a massive do-it-yourself campaign who are now part of their donor database. And they've been really, you know, thinking about and struggling over the last couple of years the right way and the most effective way to keep them engaged in the organization and to get them to come back and give more down the line.
That was, let's talk about the number. There's 2.5 million or something new donors to the organization, right?
Yeah, I think it, and on top of that, a lot of them had no connection to the cause before they embarked in this campaign. For a lot of them, they don't have a personal connection to ALS, but they were made aware of it, and they were compelled enough to not only, you know, take the challenge, but also to write a check and give to the organization. So they have this massive opportunity, but they can't communicate with these donors in the same way that they do those who have been part of their network for a long time. And they can't necessarily count on a high number of them to turn around and give to them again.
Yeah, I know that that was one of the things that Barbara, I can't remember her last name. Do you remember the name of the CEO of Charity Water, Peter? Barbara... She was a guest. Any case, it's not your fault.
Yeah, I've spoken a lot to Lance Slaughter, who is their top development person, and you know they've come up with some things that they think are working well for them, and one of them is communicating a lot about the impact of the gifts that were given and talking about the progress that those gifts have made, and then in turn saying, you know, additional support will help us get, you know, here, here, and here. So they're really putting a big focus on, you know, not only showing the impact of the gifts, but also showing that they've been spending those funds wisely and are getting results out of it. And that's been a message that they found not only works well, but also validates a lot of what people did for them 2 years ago when they did this.
Yeah, well, that's a smart way to start to engage people, and they had all sorts of challenges and opportunities when this thing broke. What was that 2014? I guess. In fact, it ended.
Yeah,
just,
it was almost 2 years.
Yeah,
ago
it was 2 years
now,
ago. It ended.
It was August of 2014.
Right. I'm pretty, pretty sure it ended.
Really, it was the equivalent of winning the lottery, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, they suddenly had all of this great these great unexpected resources, but you know, when you're not planning for that, there's a lot of challenges that come with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've I think done a very responsible job of communicating about those challenges and how they're addressing them and what they're learning along the way. But you know, it's almost impossible to fall into something like that and have the and have everything in place that you need to be able to capitalize on it perfectly.
Yeah, it fell in their lap, and that was, as I was starting to say, that was one of the challenges that Barbara and I talked about when she was on in, it would have been October of 2014, She was a guest for the hour. In fact, we recorded that at the Chronicle of Philanthropy Studios because they're in Washington, D.C. And I was down there and worked it out. But
I actually remember that one. Yeah, that was one of the highest profile shows you've done, I believe. Right.
Well, it's second to this one, of course.
This one's going to break all records.
Right.
Sure.
That's right. That's right. Okay. How do shepherd these new donors to your organization's work longer term? All right, clearly.
So that's one, and right. I think another key challenge is budgeting for this. Some of these campaigns kind of jump the wall and become really successful. In a lot of cases, you can't plan for that, and B, you can't necessarily expect to replicate it the next year. So if you have somebody who does a do-it-yourself campaign and they raise $200,000 or $300,000 for you, you can't necessarily expect that donor to do the same thing for you next year. So how do you plan for that? How do you make sure you budget responsibly for that revenue and set the right expectations within your organization? That's another challenge that we've heard organizations report to us.
Something else that's mentioned in the report that's very closely related to that, budgeting for the future, is just getting the volunteers to do repeat campaigns in the future.
Right, right. And that's certainly a big challenge. St. Baldrick's has been great with this. They've found a really creative way to encourage people to take part multiple times in their head shaving campaigns. Created a secret society. I guess it's not a secret society, but a society called the Knights of the Bald Table. And if you take part in seven head shaving campaigns with them, they actually will hold an event for you and have a knighting ceremony for you, and you get a special pin, and you get quite a bit of recognition for it. There are some ways that organizations are trying to deal with this issue and find some fun and creative ways to get people to come back and do something more than once. But it is a challenge because, the first time I say I'm going to go sing karaoke with Tony, my friends may think it's a fun thing. The second time they were like, well, I saw that act already. I don't necessarily want to support it again.
Right. It's like me doing Blue Pedicure Challenge 2.
Right, right.
Who cares now? Now, if I did Red Pedicure Challenge, that would be different. That would be a whole new campaign. That's completely different. But you can't go back to the blue. You can never go back. all right, we have a couple more minutes left, man. What have we not talked about? What have I not asked you that you'd like to?
Well, I think one thing I think is really interesting on this is just the fact that it is such a kind of an evolving form of fundraising that that organizations are really craving information and craving opportunities to connect with each other about it. One thing that I'm working to try to identify are ways that not only can we provide good resources through the Chronicle, through the peer-to-peer forum, and through other sources like this, but also how can we bring people together and get them talking about this more. And I certainly would welcome anybody in the audience who is thinking about this and working on this who wants to talk about it to reach out to me, reach out to you, and find a way to further the conversation. Because I think because this is such an evolving form of kind of formal fundraising now, the book is still being written, so to speak, on how to do it well. And the more input we can get, the better.
Contact Peter, because once this is over, I have no interest in the topic. I'm committed to nothing. So contact Peter directly.
All right, come to me. I'm more than happy to take the
No, I'm committed to everything.
Are talk
all right,
to us,
okay. He's on Twitter. He's at P Panapento. All right, the name of the report is the Do-It-Yourself Fundraising Handbook. Is there a convenient URL at the Chronicle site, Peter?
The URL I have is far from convenient.
Yeah, okay. That's the one I have. So just the Do-It-Yourself Fundraising Handbook. You'll find it on the Chronicle of Philanthropy site.
Yes, Peter, and I believe they are, after Labor Day, going to start really heavily marketing it and including it in their Philanthropy Today newsletter and other things too. So there'll be a lot of opportunities to see it. And if you follow me on Twitter, I'll be tweeting about it and sharing the link there quite a bit over the next few weeks as well.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So I want to thank you again for coming on quickly again since August. That was very gracious of you. You do cool reports, so I'm happy to give voice to them. But now I've lost interest in the topic, so it's over. Okay.
So we get 50 minutes of your attention, and that's it, Tony.
Yeah, well,
I get that.
There's a lot going on. It's a busy place.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to the next time I help with something that is of interest to you for, you know, a half hour or an hour.
That's right.
Talk more about it, and
that's
you
right.
can move on and move on to the next big thing.
All right. Do not assume it'll be an hour next time. Thank you very much. Well done. No, thank you very much, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. My pleasure. Next week, I don't know. I can't say, but you know I won't let you down. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant. They have a year-end accelerator, Pursuant.com/year-end accelerator for your year-end fundraising. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers, WeBeeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer here with me. Gavin Dahl is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and our music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that, Scotty. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, yes. It was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.